we've got to find ways to get dentistry to feed the associates, to keep them happy, to grow the business, to allow us to go think and do more of what we want to do. But that only can really happen if you slowly eliminate your menu. You've got to get things off your plate.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Super pumped to be here recording. New studio, new me, still loving it. Hey, check it out on video too, because we're posting these things now on the old YouTube. So if you want to watch it, you can watch it. Today, what I want to talk about is, I did a popular podcast that had a lot of good feedback earlier in the year on feeding your associate first. And I want to expound on that episode because I've had a couple calls lately with some docs. I'm seeing things in my own practice. And so I want to kind of talk more about what that looks like and how you really do that successfully to grow your business, do more of what you want to do, and keep your associates happy. Because ultimately, that's a huge key to our own success. Hey, check out 3D Dentist, www.3d-dentist.com. We got a lot of good courses coming up. You know, we got some good printing courses, smile design, and our implant continuum is taking off. So if you're looking to get into full arch implants, digital workflows, if you don't place implants, please check us out. It's good to do. Okay, so let's jump into this. Well, so I talked to a buddy yesterday and he says, hey, I'm having trouble kind of feeding my associate, or he's still not staying busy. And he had, to preface this, his associate almost left because of a money issue, right? Because he was not feeling like he was getting enough, not making any money. So he got an opportunity at a corporate office where he was going to make more money. So, and then the owner doctor was kind of put off by that. And I was like, hey, like at the end of the day, like they want to make more money. I don't see that. You can't, it is business at some point. So you can't necessarily look at that in a negative light, like they're a bad person. Otherwise, other than just like, yeah, maybe they're not getting enough opportunity. So, I started talking to him and I was like, okay, well, how are you feeding your associate? Like, what does that actually look like? And he's like, well, I try to schedule stuff on them. You know, I kind of try to hand off and communicate and say, like, we got great doctors here. I got Dr. So-and-so and Dr. Me. And, you know, we'll get you scheduled and taken care of. And they do great work, yada, yada, yada. And that does work for a lot of it. I think that's people's initial reaction when they think of, like, how do I feed them? Is that I just say, hey, we've got this doctor. They're great. Will you choose them? And I'm like, that's the worst possible way to do it, because who wants to choose the new person when they're used to seeing you? You've been in their office. You're viewed as the expert or the more seasoned dentist. So like, to me, that's just, it isn't going to go far enough. So how do you really choose? So then I think the next layer comes into, well, I'm going to allow myself to get booked out and hope that the earlier availability of the associate then will then feed them. Well, the problem with that model is that now we're reliant on some level of volume and mass to get to the point where I've got to get booked out so far before this tipping point occurs where people are like, yeah, I'm willing to wait 2 months, but I'm not willing to make 3 months. And that's a silly example. And the problem with that one, the real problem with that one, is that you're staying busy or the owner doctor staying busy. And like, we could talk about what associates can do to make this more advantageous in another episode. And I probably should kind of interview mine and talk to him about that. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about is trying to allow them to grow and be busy, get things off my plate so that I can grow and do more of what I want to do. So the scheduling model doesn't work because now I'm just busy and do it that way. So then what's the third model? Well, the third model would be now that we start to block schedule, and this expedites number two, option two, but we still run into the same issues. And what I mean by that is we get serious about block scheduling to where we start limiting certain procedures or the amount that I do certain procedures per day. So that looks like I only see patients that need just fillings once in the morning, once in the afternoon. So if those two blocks are filled, then they got to go to the next day. There could be availability on that day, but I'm only doing so many fillings per day. Or I only do one set of fillings per day. Or I only do, you know, whatever it is that's bogging down your schedule that could be given to the doctor or the associate doctor, you start blocking that in a minimum way. We think of block scheduling primarily as something that we block in the positive, meaning that like I'm going to block these procedures so that I can do them. What I don't think we think about enough, which is as important, I would argue, is that we minimize certain things that we don't need to be doing. So we keep those blocks at a lower level so that our schedule can get filled by the things that we want to do more of. So it's kind of taking out an approach both ways. We block things we want to do, and we block things that we don't want to do because we want to limit the amount that we do them. So this brings me kind of to my final point on the one that really works, which seems to be the hardest one for Dr. Ishii, but in my opinion, is the actual one that moves the needle. And that's that we have to start reducing our menu of services. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is we got to stop. You can't be Cheesecake Factory. Like for those of you that don't know, Cheesecake Factory basically offers every possible food item on that you can imagine. Tacos, pasta, steaks, hamburgers, chicken tenders, fish. It's like this buffet of whatever you want, we've got it here. That's a model on some level from a practice standpoint, meaning I'm okay with our practice being kind of a one-stop shop, but what I'm not okay with is providers being that way. Because what I found on my own, like I went through that model of like, hey, I'm going to be the super GP. I'm going to do everything. There was a good 3 or 4 year period where I basically did it all. And in hindsight, what I realized was I did it all pretty well, but I was kind of like jack of all trades, ace of none. So in a scaling model where I want to like start to really, and the problem with that is that that mentality limits what I'm getting into here, because now if I can do everything, patients would prefer to see me. I don't have anything to give away. So we've got to find a way to reduce our menu of services. So what does that look like? Well, I think I'll give you two examples that I think are no-brainers that as we clinically excel and move up, we should start doing these things. Number one, we've got to limit the amount of filling-only patients we do. At some point, we've got to say, hey, I no longer do just fillings on a patient. Let me let that sink in. I no longer do just fillings on a patient. So if the patient needs a quadrant of dentistry, crown, 2 fillings, I'm willing to do it. But if they just need 3 MODs, I no longer offer that service. Now, obviously what I'm not saying is that if you're a solo doctor, that this is where you should want an associate, because at some point you can say that you stop doing those things. I mean, there's niche practices out there, but that definitely hurts your base and kind of de-recession proofs yourself, because that base and those fillings are what kind of insulates the practice to economic downturns. Because frankly speaking, and fillings are typically covered by insurance almost 100%. So if push comes to shove, I can go back to doing that dentistry. So what I'm saying is I got to see that at some point I graduate from procedures. I kind of made an analogy yesterday. I was like, think about it this way. You have a house, you keep going and buying new furniture, and you never get rid of your old furniture. That's like what dentists like to do. We like to go learn new skill sets, and then we never get anything off. Like it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, my time gets bogged down. We're dentists are hoarders. That's what we are. So anyways, so what I'm getting at is you got to start limiting these procedures. So I think fillings are a great one, that at some point you graduate from fillings. So I may do quadrants of dentistry that include fillings. I may do comprehensive care that does fillings. But at some point, I've got to say I no longer do patients with fillings if they just need that. I'll give you another one. If you like placing implants, if you're surgically inclined and clinical skill set, graduate from extracting teeth unless they are committed to grafting it for the potential for an implant, or they're committed to the entire process, meaning getting a tooth back. Stop extracting teeth without it being attached to a bone graft and or an implant. Like, these are hard lines for me. Like, you can have a menu that says, hey, yes, I do this surgical procedure, but I don't do this surgical procedure. So now if the patient decides, hey, I just want to do the extraction, hey, no problem. We can do that. We'd love to take care of you here. You're going to see Dr. X. Well, I'd like to see Dr. Y. Well, he only does the dentistry that's accompanied with this type of service. So if you're willing to go through and replace the teeth, then he's happy to see you. He can make that work. But he's aligned his schedule and his book of business and his menu of services to these things. This immediately creates a volume of dentistry that can be fed down to other providers. Because I look at it as ideally the owner doctor would always be leveling up. So they're giving things off the plate to the dentist, the other dentist in the office that can't do what they can do. I like to say it like this, like the dentistry should be scheduled on a capable provider with the least potential skill set. So let me say that again. The dentistry should be scheduled on the capable provider. So meaning they've got to be able to do it and do it well. There's a clinical standard. They don't just get to do it. They got to be able to do it to the level I want of the provider that has the least potential to go do other things. So if I have one doctor that only does fillings and crowns, and I have another doctor that does fillings, crowns, root canals, and ortho per se, and I'm trying to give away a crown, I would rather give that crown to the first doctor if they've got the availability, because I know the second doctor could get filled with root canals or ortho or something that's more productive. So I feed kind of down in that model and that mentality. So this starts to happen even with our associates, is they got to start to look at their menu of services and kind of graduate up. Otherwise, you just get a pool of associates that are all, again, competing for the same pot. It's simple how we've gone from two doctors to six doctors in 2 years, 3 years. Because we would graduate from procedures, take it off our menu, and then give it to someone else. But the leadership in that, the hard work in that, is being willing to give something away, take it off your menu in hopes that it will get filled with something else. And being able to understand that most of the time, if not all the time, it's a more profitable procedure. So it's not like I have to fill to a one-to-one ratio. Meaning I could give up 2 hours of my time and I only really need to fill 1 hour of my time because the profitability is going to be the same. Think about it like me giving up crowns to replace them with implants. It doesn't take as long or else to do as many to equal the same amount of production. Now I get time back to build my business, to grow things. I mean, it's crazy how it's a little bit of this chicken or the egg. So we've got to find ways to get dentistry, to feed the associates, to keep them happy, to grow the business, to allow us to go think and do more of what we want to do. But that only can really happen if you slowly eliminate your menu. You've got to get things off your plate. So I'll walk you through kind of relatively quickly my trajectory. So a couple of years ago, I decided I'm only going to do one set of fillings per day. Like, that's reasonable. That's not cold turkey. But if there's a filling on that day, go to the next day. So we would book out fillings. I'd be booked out for fillings for 2 months. I could see you tomorrow for an implant. That's kind of like phase one. That's kind of like the option three method, right, that I mentioned earlier. That would naturally push people to Megana, who's our first associate. Well, then I finally got to the point where I was like, okay, I want to keep feeding Megana more. She can handle more. And I'm seeing what it's doing to my schedule, and I'm liking it. Now I'm going to eliminate fillings altogether. I no longer offer that service unless it's in conjunction with comprehensive care, where I'm sedating them and doing a lot of dentistry one time. Then I'll do the filling. Then I graduated to, okay, I'm no longer going to do single crowns. I'm only going to do quadrants of crowns or quadrant dentistry where there's a crown with some other stuff. But I'm not going to just book 2 hours for a Sarah crown. I'm going to graduate from that. Megana can handle that. Then as Megana's schedule got booked, I was still trying to give stuff away. Now all of a sudden that tells me, hey, we're probably ready for the next doctor. Bring in next doctor. Then at some point I was like, okay, well, now I'm going to actually eliminate like large restorative dentistry. And I'm going to say, okay, unless it's $5,000 or more in one visit, I no longer do that restorative dentistry. So now I'm really hedging it. So if it's two crowns, a crown and a couple fillings, like I'm getting all that off my plate. They're maintaining to be fed. Their schedules are staying full. They're making money. They're happy. And now I'm getting to replace this more and more and more with what I want to do. Let's talk about the surgical side. First was extractions. I only do them with the graft. Otherwise, got to see Dr. Jackson at the time. Then it was eventually single green light implants. I no longer do number 19, number 30. I've got a doctor, because what's going to happen, by the way, just to kind of like show you where this goes, is ultimately the associate doctors want to grow. Not all of them. And I don't have a preference whether you want to or not. Like I support them and where they're at. I want them to grow to the level that they're happy. So if being restorative dentist makes you happy, great. If you want to keep growing, great. But the ones that want to grow, I got to remember that I can't just make them my, like, I want to say my filling bitch, but that's slightly inappropriate. But that's kind of what a lot of dentists want to make them. It's just like the filling junkie. Like, yeah, you're just here to do the shit work. So really what needs to happen is I got to keep growing so that they can keep growing. Otherwise, they leave. So I will ultimately feed you as far as you want to go because I'll just try to keep leveling up. That was my mentality. So then all of a sudden it was like, okay, I'll give away the green light implants. You know, give away this, give away this. And so that's kind of how we've gone over the practice. Now, I see, obviously, it's harder for him to do this. So let me talk about a little bit about the pitfalls or some practical things that you've got to do to make this actually work. One is you have to understand yourself. You've got to know that if you're the kind of person that is going to say yes to the patient if they ask to see you, that you relieve yourself from those decisions. So now what we would suggest is when you get done with a treatment presentation or a hygiene exam or whatever it is, that you no longer talk about who's seeing them or all that. You say, do you have any other clinical questions for me? Because ultimately that's what our job is to do, is to kind of relay the clinical stuff. And then I should have systems and a team in place that can handle the other stuff. And so then I've given my team information to know that the menu should look like this, to where they know based off my blocks, my schedule, and what we've told them I offer and don't offer, that these are things I do. So if say I go in and diagnose a single crown, you have any other clinical questions for me? No, great, awesome. Jess, hygienist or you know, someone like that, well, then I'll say, they'll take it from here. And if you think of any other clinical questions, I'm around, let me know. I leave. Then Jess will get them scheduled and say, hey, do you have any first availability? Do you have any certain availability that would fit your schedule better? Yeah, I like to do Tuesday mornings. Great. We'll get you. We got a 7:30. Does that work? That sure does. Awesome. You'll be with Dr. Amber that morning. She's great. You'll love her. She does a lot of that dentistry. I really like to see Dr. Sully. Oh, I totally get that. Honestly, you don't really want Dr. Sully doing that. He actually doesn't really even do that dentistry anymore. So Dr. Sully now focuses on the surgical parts, some of the more comprehensive, larger, more complex cases. And so he hasn't done that type of dentistry in quite a minute. We've really handpicked Amber to come in here and do this type of dentistry. So I really can't see Dr. Sully. No, unfortunately you can't. Would you like to meet Dr. Amber before I let you go? Yeah, that'd be great. Perfect. Introduction, new face, smile. Like that. Like that's the kind of stuff that happens, because if my dad stays in the room, then his mentality is going to be, well, yeah, just put it there. Well, that's your implant block. Yeah, just put it there. Like that's the kind of thing that happens. So we gotta know ourselves, understand ourselves, and empower our team to like make the decisions for us and do that. Another thing we've done to kind of help him, which I think is a great idea, is if you've been in practice a long time and you've got, you know, just a, you struggle with letting go, which is ultimately what this is, then you block a certain amount of time that you can be comfortable with that will be your, like, this is economically done, but emotionally good for me. And what I mean by that is you block a 2-hour appointment a week or two 2-hour appointments a month where you're going to do dentistry that makes no sense for you to do whatsoever. Outside of it's a patient that it's your best friend, it's your your mom's, you know, hairdresser, and she's asked you to do it, like whatever it is, but you're gonna, it's that single crown of those fillings that there's tons of the people that could do them that you graduated from, but you're gonna do it just because your heartstrings get pulled. But you gotta limit that. It can't just be everybody. You gotta set boundaries for yourself. Otherwise you're gonna continue to grow. You'll get stumped. And that's what's happening with this doctor I talked to, is like, hey, fundamentals are good. Systems in place are good. He's the problem. And I love this dude. And like, he knows that. But I'm like, yeah, man, I mean, the only difference at this point between you and me isn't skill set. It's just your willingness to say no to dentistry and to go get the dentistry you want to do. Only difference. It's not rocket science. Anyways, I hope this was helpful. I think this is a quality episode. I'm excited about hopefully what this means. If you've got questions about this, please DM me, message me, let me know. If you thought this was good, let me know. We want to do more of it. I really think this is so impactful and important for growth. And our industry needs this progression of owner doctors and associates and helping mentor them and grow them. And so that's just so important. And frankly speaking, it's the best way to transition your practice and these patients that you care about, because you can't be there forever. You can't save everybody. So if you're in that position, like, you got to at some point be willing to grow up someone around you to pass the torch to. So I hope you enjoy this. Everybody, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.